Welcome to the Podglomerate.
For everything that you were too afraid to ask at home, too embarrassed to ask at school, or was just too hard to ask your partner, welcome to the Sex Rap.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Sex Rap. You're here today with Spring and Andrew, your favorite sex personalities on the internet, answering your questions. Your questions about anything at all related to sex or sexual health or relationships. How are you doing today, Spring?
I'm doing really well. It's a sunny day in New York City in March, so thank goodness.
It is also a sunny day here, but we have slipped into full summer. Like, we had a couple weeks down in the 70s, now it's into the mid-80s every day.
Wow.
And it's spring break. I don't know if you know this about Miami, but it's like a major spring break destination and the whole world descends. I had tickets to a movie and I had to drive all the way to Broward, which is like 20 miles from my house. It's not that far. But with spring break people, it took like 2 hours to drive 20 miles. Like, they're just a throng of bodies. Wow. Do you remember our undergrad grad days where we used to go to like Indigo or Players and it would just be like wall-to-wall people?
Yes.
The entire city is like the inside of a nightclub, which is like bodies everywhere. But I'm having a really good break. I'm chilling. I'm having fun. I'm here with you, which is a great way to start out my spring break. But Miami hates spring break. They're trying to break up with spring break. We should have answered that question. Like, how can you break up with spring break, Miami? You can't. It's the economic driver. Anyway, I'm excited for today's topic. For the listeners, this month we've been doing like the forces surrounding us and impacting ourselves and our relationships.
Unseen forces.
And today is one of the topics that most people have never really thought about very much, just because it's so omnipresent. It's everywhere surrounding us. And I know it's one of Spring's favorite topics. I'm going to have her introduce it today.
Today we are talking about toxic monogamy culture. And I love this. And I want to call it toxic because it is toxic. Monogamy is not toxic. We are going to talk about the differences between monogamy and toxic monogamy culture. We're not saying monogamy is toxic. That is a great choice for many people to be in monogamous relationships. But what we are talking about is these cultural ideas that are associated with monogamy that are toxic to everybody's lives, no matter what type of relationship structure you are involved in. There are these toxic monogamy culture ideas that are impacting you. And that is what we are talking about today.
So when we say toxic monogamy, right, like, people have lots of different orientations in their life. And we're used to talking about sexual orientations where people can be queer or people can be gay or lesbian or bisexual. And then we have our gender identity, where people are male or female or non-binary, or there's lots of other examples. Like, we have all of these different kind of orientations, but there's this other third orientation that sort of sits there that's never talked about, right? And that third orientation we have is our relationship orientation, right? Now, a lot of people, like Spring said, are really happy with that one other partner, one other sexual partner, marrying one person and being with them the rest of their life. But there's also a huge portion of people who exist in a lot of other kinds of relationships and relationship styles. We'll talk about those a little bit later this episode. But today, I bet a lot of listeners didn't even know that they had a relationship orientation. But that's sort of what we're going to getting into today. Not knowing that it exists, not knowing that there are other forms and styles, is a product, right? It's that unseen force surrounding us, because the world has told us and taught us, from children's cartoons to media to parents to friends to family to church to school to government to class to every part of our life is dominated by this toxic monogamy culture. So that's what we're going to be talking about. I'm going to start, though. I'm going to go way back. When I think about toxic monogamy culture, monogamy overall for humans is a relatively new phenomenon, right? If we go back very far in human history, humans are non-monogamous, right? If we look at all of the other apes and monkeys, great apes, etc., like, humans are, you know, like another mammal. None of them are really monogamous. Some are like monogamous for a season or monogamous for a year or two. But if we look, the relationship orientation of mammals, Homo sapiens and other great apes and chimpanzees, is non-monogamous. And if we go back through cultures, right, even human cultures that we have a lot of writing, we know a lot about, we know that humans were not monogamous up until very recently. We can look at like a communal parenting of the Mosuo peoples. We can look at polyamory in ancient Hawaiian societies, Polynesian societies, Aboriginal societies, American Indian societies, European societies, like everywhere we go in the world. Today, there are tons of cultures that still have multi-marriages, multi-people. We can, it doesn't really matter where we look, like everywhere we look through all of human history, right? Humans are mostly non-monogamous. Now, there are times and periods and places where we have stories of people who are, but even if we look at like our religious texts for most of the world's major religions, in those religious texts, if you actually pay attention and look what's going on, those are texts that are written in a world that is largely non-monogamous, where there are multiple partners. Not always for the betterment of people, but humans were not are very broadly, when we look through our history, biologically and anthropologically, not that monogamous.
And what we see really is that in westernized cultures, where there's this real focus on independence, right, and like being self-sufficient, that this is where monogamy flourishes, because we're moving away from communal models of living and we're moving away from reliance on the community. And these relationship structures that are not monogamous, these polyamorous or not, there's lots of types of non-monogamy, but I'm going to just say polyamorous for a shortcut. These polyamorous relationships are relying on community, and it's like this return to communal values and to supporting each other in a broader sense. And so I think that, you know, in these Western individualized countries where we have this big focus on being independent and self-sufficiency, then that's where we're seeing, you know, monogamy is like flourishing, because it aligns with those values. And so it does become a little bit of like breaking with society to start to say, okay, I'm interested in being supported in more than just this one way. And what can this look like?
I mean, we hear people all the time say things like, it takes a village, or like, we have all of this, like parts of English language that are very much saying like, being on your own and independently doing these things is probably not the best or easiest way to do them. Like if you look at your friends who, or if you look at your aunts or your uncles, if you look at people who have kids, it is really, really difficult to do on your own or with just one other person, right? Like raising up and having the time to care for another human being and making sure they're nurtured is really difficult. And toxic monogamy culture essentially tells people that you, as a human being, are the perfect partner of this other one other human being, and you have absolutely everything it takes to fulfill all of that other person's needs, their emotional needs, their physical needs, their sexual needs, their financial needs, like all of the needs of that person, their friendship needs. And on top of that, it says that the two of you, as this perfect example of a monogamous, happy relationship, have absolutely everything it takes to successfully have, raise, and be successful with a child or multiple children. And we just know most of the time that's not the case. I like to talk about this like it's the myth of the one. And I think that's one of the most damaging parts of toxic monogamy. We hear this message, we see this message, right? Like every single television show or cartoon that you watch as a kid, every single movie that we see, every single Oscar winner, like all of them are selling this myth that there's this one perfect other person who's going to fulfill all of your needs. You're going to be a perfect match. Your life is going to be perfectly in sync. And if we really look, right, we look at the people around us, if we look at the relationships that we have in our life, we already, you know, sort of say we don't want to be in toxic monogamy culture, right? You have groups of friends that fulfill lots of different needs, and you call different people on the phone or text different people when you need different kinds of support. And you're a different kind of support for different people in your life. But that's not how it's ever talked about, right? That's the toxic monogamy sort of seeping in, where it's feeding you this one image of what your life and relationship should be. But on the other hand, like when you examine yourself or examine people around you, like happy, healthy, successful relationships are based on broad networks of support to fulfill all of the various needs that you have as a person.
Yeah. So I think it would be great to like talk through like a few other of these like myths. So like this one is like that one person needs to like fulfill all parts of you, right? They have to do everything for you. They have to like be perfect at all of these types of support and needs that you have. And when you say that out loud, I think most people can just automatically say like, of course that's not true, right? Like, but that is what toxic monogamy culture is teaching us. It's teaching us that you have to go to this one person for everything. And if they can't do all those things for you, then they're not the partner for you. And you better go try to find somebody else that can do all that. But that's very unrealistic, right? We know that there is not any one person that can be everything to another person. That's just humanly not possible. And so another example of like a toxic monogamy culture idea would be like, if you truly love somebody, then like you would never, ever, ever be even attracted at all to another person. Like you would never even like light up in your head like, oh, that person's attractive. This is another idea that toxic monogamy teaches us. It teaches us that when you have the one, that is the only person that you can be aroused by, is the only person that you can feel love for. It's the only person that you can like be enmeshed with. And all of these things are very damaging as well. Even if you want to be in a monogamous relationship, you are going to be attracted to other people. That's a scientific fact.
I mean, I call it your lizard brain, right? Like whenever you're walking around and you see something, you're going to see a body, a person, a type, or multiple types for your lizard brain. Like it's not your cognitive thinking brain. It's underneath it. It's the brain that we control with our cognition, but it's going to go, ha ha ha, that's nice. Like it's just a part of humans as a mammal. Like we are attracted to other bodies, and we're going to see those bodies and it's going to light up. But in toxic monogamy culture, there's something wrong with you. And people get into fights about this and people get divorced because you're attracted by someone who's not me, because it's selling you a bill of lies. I want everyone to think about like your parents, right? Most of us have a mom and a dad, right? That's part of monogamy culture. That's what most of our families look like. And if you look, right, most of your dads probably have no real heartfelt friends. A couple listeners, I'm sure your dad, you do. But most of the time, because of toxic monogamy culture, paired with some of the other previous episodes we've been talking about over the last month, like patriarchal toxic toxicity, we see that men have a really hard time being intimate with anyone except for this myth of the one in this relationship, this perfect other one in the relationship. They typically don't have really great supports and they don't form strong intimate bonds with anybody else because toxic monogamy culture tells them they're only supposed to have this one person. And it ends up being really problematic in a lot of different ways. We can look at something like when people are divorced, and heterosexual couples, when men and women are divorced, men often really struggle, have very high rates of suicide. There's all these negative health and psychosocial outcomes because of toxic monogamy culture and the expectations that people have surrounding it. I don't know. I talk about emotional pornography a lot on the show. I wish I would have coined the term. I came up with the term on the fly while talking to Spring, but someone beat me in a blog post like 15 years ago. But I think I'm the only person who's used it really since. But the dominance of emotional pornography is really where we see this toxic monogamy hitting as well, right? These unrealistic expectations surrounding our relationships, unreal expectations surrounding romance, what love looks like or feels like, what sex is supposed to be like. This toxic monogamy culture makes romance worse in our lives, right? It makes intimacy worse in our lives. It makes sex and orgasms and pleasure worse in our lives, because part of toxic monogamy culture is that the other person is just supposed to know everything about you and they're supposed to be able to fulfill your needs without you having to voice them. Like, I'm sure a lot of people here have dated somebody and you get mad that they didn't do that thing that you wanted. But you didn't tell them to do that thing or have good communication about that thing, because toxic monogamy culture comes with that expectation that the other person is just going to get up and do that thing for you because they're that one perfect other partner. And people learn that because of things like emotional pornography, but I mean, it comes from every source, this toxic monogamy culture.
I think we have a whole episode about Hollywood's role in that, right? And we talk about the TV and movies and how they propagate those ideas, right? And they are teaching us in these romantic comedies that that person is going to be able to figure that out without speaking to you. And then they're going to fulfill every unexpressed desire you've ever had. and bingo, now your life is perfect.
Which leads to a lifetime of disappointment with your partner.
Yeah. In real life, yeah.
In real life, yeah. All right. Well, we need to take a short break. When we get back, we're going to keep talking about toxic monogamy culture. We have a lot of other issues, ideas, facets to talk about. But thanks for listening, everybody. We will be right back. Welcome back to the episode, everybody. Today we are discussing toxic monogamy culture, and we were just talking about one of my favorite topics. We were just talking about emotional pornography. But I think we can talk more explicitly about how toxic monogamy hurts us inside of our relationships. And something for me, I don't know about you, Spring, when I talk about toxic monogamy culture, is all of the different ways it impacts gender and gendered scripts in the way that we're supposed to act inside of our relationships and lives.
Yeah. So when we're talking about this toxic monogamy culture, it's most often heterosexual in nature, right? And this links into our episode from last week. We are really talking about this heteronormativity that is also being applied to toxic monogamy culture. So the toxic monogamy culture is really saying, is really talking most often about a heterosexual couple. Although those things are then translated into non-heterosexual couples as well, right? All other types of couples that are existing. And these patterns are being like saying that this is what needs to happen. There needs to have like a person who is femme, who is doing all of the housework. There needs to be a person that is more masculine, that is in charge of the yard work, right? Like all of these types of things that start to happen in the home, but they are expanded into forms of power, and they are expanded in forms of like what people not only are expected to do, but then what their partners are then like laying these expectations on them without even knowing it, because culture is behind the thoughts pushing that on them.
I have a really great story about this. So I have someone who's incredibly close to me. It's a heterosexual couple and they've been married a very long time. One of them went to the military and helped pay for the wife's medical school, right? So the wife is the doctor and the husband is ex-military, and he's trained to do lots of different work, but most of it is pretty low income, right? Like the kind of work that he has available to him. And they have their first kid, and you know, the wife is a doctor and she makes a whole bunch of money, and he's making, you know, close to minimum wage doing work that he finds fulfilling. And then they have a second kid and they're like, oh, we need to do something for childcare. And instead of them having the dad stay home and take care of the kids during the day, because of this toxic monogamy culture, the man felt like he had to have a job to be of use, to be of value. If he wasn't providing for his family, then he was nothing. So they ended up spending more money in sending their kids to daycare, right, than he made, because he felt better about it. And then they had a third kid and it was even more absurd. Like, he could have stayed home and done all of this child rearing and saved their family tens of thousands of dollars over the years. But because of toxic monogamy culture, once again, partnered with a lot of the other unseen forces surrounding us, like, he just felt like he wasn't the man in a relationship, that he wasn't worth anything in the relationship if he wasn't working. So the woman kept being a doctor and making her really nice salary. And then the husband kept working, making a very low salary that didn't even cover the amount of childcare that they were paying so they could be all work full time. So they would have been more successful as a family, right? With a parent at home doing caregiving, taking care of the kids, and saving a whole bunch of money. But because of toxic monogamy culture, right? Because of the gendered script surrounding what relationships are supposed to look like, especially in heterosexual couples, there's a huge loss, right? A loss of time with kids, a loss of time and money. But that's sort of what it looks like when it unfolds, when we talk about power and power imbalances and these expectations surrounding it. And I do want to talk about LGBT relationships, right? Like LGBT relationships typically have a little bit more explicit self-awareness and discussion than heterosexual relationships do. We see that homosexual queer relationships are more likely to be non-monogamous, right? Consensual non-monogamy is much more common. We talk about open relationships and poly relationships. So a lot of what we're talking about today is very much heterosexual culture, but it does impact queer relationships as well. But yeah, like that story, it's still in my head. I think about it. I talk about it. When I teach, I talk about it. Like, it's just crazy the power that these forces have over making pretty negative overall long-term choices for you and your family. But it doesn't stop there, right? We have episodes about jealousy, and we've talked about jealousy a lot over the years. But if we look about the development of jealousy, if we look at like jealousy being seen as this real cutesy emotion, or we even have had people submit questions like, my boyfriend's not jealous. I don't like it. What's wrong with him? Like, I want my boyfriend to be jealous of me.
It's all crazy.
Of this, yeah, it's crazy.
We
all
think,
of this jealousy.
We think jealousy means love. Wait. Just say it again. We think jealousy means love.
Yeah.
What the heck? That, what, why? Why do we think that if someone is jealous, that means they love you? Because Hollywood and culture and toxic monogamy culture has taught us that, and that is not true.
Right. Jealousy is a really serious negative issue surrounding people inside of relationships, right? It's about issues with communication. It's about issues with trust. It's about issues with intimacy. It's about issues with vulnerability. It's often about issues with feeling inadequate. Like, I don't feel like I'm enough for this other person and they're going to look for something somewhere else. I'm not that perfect one, or they're not the perfect one, but we're going to pretend that we are, right? We're going to keep that lie going. And then we end up with jealousy in relationships. And at the end of the day, we know jealousy is very negative for relationships. We have, like I said, we have a whole episode on it. Jealousy is not love, right? Possessiveness is not love.
And it's okay to feel jealous. It's normal for feelings of jealousy to arise. And then you can process them and talk about them with a therapist, with your friends, and with your partner. You can talk about it with anybody and you can process it and you can release these feelings. But that feeling does not equate to love. That feeling that comes up doesn't mean that you love someone. It means you have some issues that you need to figure out, right? And that's okay. We all have that. It's not like you shouldn't beat yourself up if you have it, but you need to understand that jealousy is not related to love. It's actually, it's almost the opposite, right? It's almost the opposite. Because when we are talking about love, we're talking about the ability to fully be yourself, to express yourself honestly and openly with a partner. And jealousy is coming in when we're not able to do those things. And when we feel like we can't say something to a partner, or we're worried about something and we're like afraid to ask them about it, right? That's when these moments come up. And so we need to stop and say, okay, I'm feeling jealous. Like, let's explore what's behind this. And let me say to myself and to all of toxic monogamy culture, this doesn't mean love.
Does not mean love. And unfortunately, when we look at something like jealousy, like Spring and I are talking about it in a kind of, I don't want to say cutesy, but we're talking about it in like this real ephemeral, like theoretical way. When we look at the way jealousy pans out inside of relationships, especially in heterosexual people in the United States, it starts to explain why intimate partner violence against women is one of the top causes of death for women between the ages of like 30 and 55, right? Because people get wildly jealous and we're trained to not talk about it, not resolve it, not think about it. But we feel justified, like I'm jealous because of, and then we come up with a bunch of reasons and rationales. And if you really look at those reasons and rationales, those are actually issues to resolve and a conversation that needs to happen. That list of reasons is not a reason to attack someone or get angry at somebody. Most of the time, jealousy is a you issue. It's not a them issue. And if it's a them issue, then you really need to have a serious conversation about what's going on. But this jealousy leads to possessiveness, right? Like, I own your body. I own your sex. I don't want you talking to other men or other women. I don't want you talking to that kind of person. I don't want you wearing those that kind of clothing. I just saw an ad that went out in New York City for a man who was trying to hire a gay guy to go out with his wife whenever she wanted to go dancing or partying, because he didn't want to go, didn't want her to go out with a heterosexual man. So like, I mean, it's paying $50 an hour. If I lived in Manhattan, I would be like, you're paying for me to go out clubbing and dancing with somebody for fun? Like adult babysitting is what it sort of sounds like. It's crazy, but it's a real ad in Manhattan. I mean, it's kind of sweet in a way too, but it's also this kind of gross, toxic monogamy. It's like, I don't want to go out, but I don't want her to talk to like her friends or other men when she's out. So I want to hire a third party to watch. And we see this possessiveness like unfurl in a lot of other really negative ways as well. We have tons of episodes like people are jealous of dildos, or people are jealous of vibrators, or people are jealous of fleshlights, or people are jealous of pornography, or people are jealous of all of like friends and other relationships that you have inside of your life. And that jealousy, that possessiveness, right? Possessiveness is sort of that next step, says like, I'm going to put myself between you and these other people and create this ultimatum where you're going to have to really be that myth of that one with me even more and get rid of these other support structures, right? Because jealousy is knocking out the other kinds of support that you need in your life, or you're trying to knock out somebody else's pieces of support. Now, Spriggan are not saying like if there's a history of infidelity or cheating and other things going on, like jealousy is probably not the right word I would use. Usually like there's a conversation in therapy and counseling and a breakup that I would recommend, probably in that order if there's infidelity going on.
Surprise, surprise, Andrew's recommending a breakup.
Well, I mean, in cases of like
just joking.
Like in consensual non-monogamy, things are great. In non-consensual non-monogamy, things are not good ever.
Yeah.
But that possessiveness is really dangerous, especially dangerous for women, the way that it plays out in American society, where we have really high rates of violence, aggression, domestic violence, and murder, right? Mostly against women in heterosexual relationships. And if we look at those stories, usually it's because of this toxic monogamy culture and all of the expectations and emotional pornography and lies. Really, it's lies that society has told us about what that other person is supposed to be. So, I mean, there's danger involved, right? Like we talked about suicide, like men kill themselves, have elevated rates of suicide because they don't have social support because of toxic monogamy culture, and that women's lives are more at risk because of toxic monogamy culture. And certainly this hits queer people too, right? Not necessarily at the same levels. There's a lot of really serious, like life-threatening issues surrounding toxic monogamy culture. And we need to talk about it more, right? We never talk about relationship orientations. We never talk about like when someone says it takes a village to do a thing, it literally takes a village, except we live in a world with toxic monogamy culture where our village is one or maybe two people, right? If you're lucky, there's like one other person. And I love these new stories we're starting to see where like two heterosexual or gay couples, because they can't afford to live in an area, will buy a house together. And then all of a sudden they have kids, multiple kids in this house. And then all four of the parents are working to raise these kids. Like toxic monogamy culture is not saying that you're going to be sleeping or getting rid of or thinking or criticizing or moving away from it. Doesn't mean that you're going to be open to having sex with tons and tons of people. It means that you're going to start understanding that to be healthy as a human being, you have relationships in your life that fulfill needs or make your life better or make your life easier. And all of that can't just rest on one person. So those families, if you're listening, if you bought that house, send us an email. I want to talk to you. I think it's so awesome. I call it the modern family, because the modern family is really just going back in time where you're combining resources and skills and talents and love, right, to have a healthier, happier life.
And, you know, I think that like, it's so important to talk about all of these different models, because we're not saying, that you have to be non-monogamous in your sexual relationships, right? But you want to think about how can I broaden my network, basically? How can I make sure that I have a community of people that are supporting me in my life? And when we talk specifically, you can like think of, for example, you know, there are, I'm sure you know somebody in a toxic monogamous relationship where their partner is like angry that they have a best friend that's really close to them that they're sharing stuff with before them or instead of them, right? Or you can think of maybe somebody who like is allowed to have this like work wife or work husband, but they're not allowed to like have any other forms of like close relationships. Like there are just like these weird kind of rules that we have started to develop and allow around like the types of relationships people can have outside of this monogamous relationship, and putting so many boundaries on them because of fears and because of this possessiveness and because of jealousy and because our culture has taught us that this is what we're supposed to do. And so when we're talking about like standing up to toxic monogamy culture, it is like in your personal life, it doesn't have to do anything with your relationship. It might just be like making sure that you are communicating your needs more. It might just be that you are making sure that you are keeping your relationships with your friends when you get into a monogamous relationship, right? Like it's continuing to think about how these issues impact your relationships and how you can keep identifying them and reflecting on them and then expanding your network.
I do want to also talk, like 100% everything Spring said, like that's what you do. Look at your relationships, make sure you expand that network of support, build that village. But there are other relationship models, right? Like the world has only told people about monogamy their whole lives, but most of us have a friend in an open relationship. Most of us have a friend who, you know, is just playing the field and has a bunch of friends with benefits. There's a lot of different kinds of relationships out there that might actually fit you better, right? We know a lot of people get divorced because they have mismatched libidos, or they're like failings in that myth of the one. And non-monogamy is a way where people can get there too. So I want to positively endorse for people who do it in a consensual way. We could actually spend like 3 or 4 hours talking about all of the different non-monogamy models of relationships and polyamorous relationship structures,
which we have an episode on.
Yeah, we've already covered, but there are like so many different ways that you can find a relationship that you find fulfilling across all of your different needs, including sex, right? Like we said, not sex. But now I think we should talk about sex, right? Because sex is actually one of the top reasons why people break up, why they get divorced, because they have mismatched libidos. And because of toxic monogamy culture, what we see happen is like, you know, if like the really traditional story is that there's a heterosexual man and a heterosexual woman in a relationship together and they get married and then the woman no longer wants to have sex. We have episodes about this, why this happens. But as the conversation continues, right, like, the man's not supposed to masturbate, or the man's not supposed to watch pornography, or the man's not supposed to do all of these other things, because even though they're not having sex, or the woman's not interested in sex as frequently as the man, it's that jealousy and possessiveness, right? Like, I don't want you to feel attracted to people who aren't me. It makes me feel unsexy. But the man's needs are not being met. And it happens the other way too, right? Where women have a much higher libido than a man, and like they feel like, I feel completely unloved and not beautiful at all because I'm not being sexually pursued as frequently. If we explore other models of relationships, it actually can help resolve a lot of these sort of issues. But that's only if we do it without like jealousy and possessiveness hanging over the head of people when we talk about it as well. Also, there are some really negative models of non-monogamy, right? Like we can talk about polygamy, where it's one man with many wives that's usually enforced by religion, and the women are usually very young. And it's negative because the women typically don't have the right to say no in the conversation, or if they're going to get married or not. So we're excising that one. Like, polygamy, F no, you're not welcome in our conversation. You are the most toxic monogamy relationship of all. You're taking consent away from people. But there are so many amazing, wonderful models out there. And you can go listen to our episode. Take a look. I'm sure you can go to Reddit or Wikipedia and look up like what are other forms of relationships that are less toxic.
And there are a lot of memoirs and more articles and things coming out about non-monogamous relationships now. And so I also encourage you to like explore some of those, you know, read other people's accounts of like what that went like for them. And that can also help you think about, you know, what models or pathways might be good for you. And exploring other styles of relationships.
Any sage words, Spring, before we close out our episode on toxic non-monogamy?
I'm just gonna start with a friendship model, I think. I think like applying this to your friendship models is like easier for a lot of people. And then you can start to expand it into your romantic relationships. Like, I think, you know, just think about like your best friend, you know, and then think like if your best friend was telling you, like, you can't be friends with that other person, or your best friend was telling you, you know, I'm jealous about this, so you can't do it anymore. And like what your response would be. And like, I think sometimes it's hard for us because of this culture to like understand some of these things in the romantic sense, because we've been programmed for so long. So I think like you might even go back and listen to this episode again and think of it like in terms of you and your best friend, and think like, oh, how angry would you be if your best friend said that, you know, they own you. You're not allowed to talk to other people that look like them or sound like them or the same gender as them or whatever, right? And then
them.
And then start to like say, okay, why do I think it's okay for my partner to do some of these things, right? And maybe you don't think it's okay, but you still allow it because you think it's expected, or because it's like programmed within you, right? So like, I just want to like start to infuse these ways that might make it easier for us to understand some of these concepts, and then start to like tease them out in our lives.
Yeah. Like just apply all of these rules in a theoretical, that we've talked about theoretically, to a friend in your life. And if your friend is giving you those kind of mandates, they're not going to be your friend for very long. Nobody wants to hang around the hyper jealous friend. So if we don't want to do that with our friends, or if we don't do that with our family members, why do we do it with our romantic partners? And that's what toxic monogamy is. It's taught us those lessons our whole life. All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. I really enjoyed today's episode. Thank you, Spring, for chatting about it with me today. If you have any questions about this episode, or any follow-up questions about anything else regarding sex or sexual health or relationships or toxic non-monogamy, we would love to hear from you. You should check out our Instagram. We're really active there. You can send us a DM and we'll get back to you really quick. It's at The Sex Wrap. That's wrap with a W, W-R-A-P. You can call us at 413-I-WRAP-IT, and you can send us an email. We are The Sex Wrap.
For everything that you were too afraid to ask at home, too embarrassed to ask at school, or just too...
Music for this episode provided by the ever elusive and mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder.
The Podglomerate. A sonic universe.